Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, book lovers. Want to hear a story? Hey, book lovers. Welcome back to Storytime with M. Today, I am reading chapter 3 of Feelers, but I felt like this chapter was kind of short to do by itself, so I'm going to throw in chapter 4 as well. Again, I am doing a chapter or two a week, so if you want, you can listen along, or if you want to read ahead, there is a link for the paperback or ebook in the show notes. And now, chapter 3. The door to my room opens, and an attendant steps inside. A new one. This one is younger. He looks like he might be around my age, which is odd. I haven't seen a teenage attendant before. Okay then, Jane, he says while examining his tablet. His eyes are pale blue and a bit bloodshot. He looks tired. His dark hair falls in a curtain around his face as he leans a little closer, squinting at the screen. He moves around the bed with surprising speed, attaching each corner of the heavy blanket to a steel hook hanging from the ceiling. He taps something into his tablet and the bed begins to shake. The cables attached to the hooks strain under the weight of the blanket as it is slowly lifted off me. The sudden rush of cold air on my sweaty skin makes me shudder, and the young man grins at me. I am suddenly extremely aware of my sweat-soaked clothes and sour breath. I try to hold my breath, which proves to be impossible. After a brief attempt, I gave in, sucking in deep lungfuls of sweet, sweet air, and then broke into a heavy cough. The touch of his hand made me jump. He helps me sit up and thumps me lightly on the back until I stop coughing. His hand remains there when the coughing subsides, and he leans in close to me with another wide smile. Better? I nod. There is something very strange about this boy. Now that he is closer, I am certain he must be 16, maybe 17 at the most. You're safe now. His words are so low, and he says them so quickly, that at first I am unsure I heard him at all. He steps back and taps on the screen of his tablet. Time for an evaluation, Jane. You've had a bit of a rough time lately. Why is that? What's changed? He stares at me patiently, but his eyes seem to be saying something more. Did he say I was safe, or was that a hallucination? He taps his fingers on the metal table near the bed. Jane, has something happened? Something new? When I said before that I hadn't seen my friend since the time our hands touched, that wasn't entirely true. I've been seeing her every night. At lights out, she comes to me as a pale blue figure. She floats through the door and hovers near my bed. She stares down at me, frowning slightly, but never saying a word. It scared me at first, but I'm used to it now. I talk to her. Not with words, of course. The attendants would hear me immediately. Instead, I try to send her thoughts. I have no idea if she understands me. She never responds. She hovers over me all night, staring grimly, until just before morning check-in, when she fades back through the door moments before the lights snap on. Jane? The young man is snapping his fingers in front of me. There she is. You fell asleep. I gave you a little something to perk you up. Technically, I'm not supposed to do that, but my dad owns this place, so it's cool. He taught me how. I notice a syringe on the table. A perfect red drop of blood hangs from the tip, waiting to fall. We lock eyes for a moment. He checks his watch, smirks at me, and winks. The air begins humming around me. The sound is soothing and wraps me in a soft, warm cloud. Comfort. Contentment. The hint of a long-ago memory of a loving childhood. That brings me back. My heart rate is climbing steadily as I sit up a little straighter and face the young man. He is still grinning. He taps on his tablet for a moment and waits. We have 30 seconds, maybe a little less, he says after a while. What? My voice is rough and scratchy from disuse. There is no reason to speak in silent trees. Usually I'm punished if I do. I turned off the monitors, scrambled them. Listen, you need to play it safe. Follow the rules, okay? Don't draw any more attention to yourself. I managed to get assigned to you for my first patient, but I can only do so much while they're watching. And Jane, they are always watching. Remember that. I nodded. Why? Was all I could think to ask. The strange young man shrugged. Because I want to help. He signaled for me to stay silent, and he tapped the screen again. Feeling better, Jane? Good girl to take your pills so willingly. Keep it up. He tapped on his tablet and the door opened with a whoosh. Just inside the doorframe, he turned and winked at me. A blood-curdling scream tore apart the heavy silence of the center. The smile vanished from the young man's face as he turned in time to hurl himself into the hallway, knocking down the patient trying to run past. There was a sickening crunch and a muffled howl as he landed on top of the frail body. I could see one thin, gray foot sticking out from under the young man's legs. An alarm buzzed and my door swung shut. Before it closed, the young man looked at me. His face was dark and troubled. Chapter 4. I am almost certain that my friend is still alive and somehow communicating with me during lights out. Her silent visits continued for a dozen nights before the first message. She floated through the door and hovered beside my bed, staring as usual. Then she blinked. It seemed to take an incredible amount of strength, and she did nothing else that night. It was several nights later when she blinked again and sent me one word, trust. Yes, I tried to telepathically scream. Yes, I trust you. I want to help you. Where are you? The girl did not respond. Her green eyes glowed in the dark. She hovered at my side until the lights came on, and for once I was able to sleep. The messages are coming more often, almost every night. Sometimes it seems especially challenging, and she falls silent for a few nights, gathering strength until she can send one again. The newest one was longer. She had been stuck on trust for a while, but this time she added a name. Neil. Trust. Neil. Who the hell is Neil? The name wasn't really helpful. Names were not used in the center. Was it the mysterious young attendant? He said he wanted to help me. Maybe my friend knew something I didn't. Maybe she'd sent him to me. There's no way to know for sure. It doesn't really matter anyway. I probably won't have a chance to talk to him again. Wrong. In the middle of the night, when I was finally becoming drowsy enough to fall asleep under my friend's watchful gaze, he burst into the room. My friend vanished in a haze, which he ran through and dropped to his knees beside my bed. They're moving you. Tonight. Now. He was sweating profusely. His dark hair clung to his damp skin. Listen. He grabbed my shoulders and shook me gently. Do not fight it. Any of it. It is going to be terrible, but remember, it could be much worse. What? He hushed me and turned to stare at the door. I heard the faintest sound outside. Damn. He dove under the bed and lay back down. The door opened seconds later and I heard them enter. There was more than one. This was unusual. I tried to keep my breathing even and slow while my heartbeat pounded in my ears. Open your eyes, Jane. Something pinched the skin of my arm and I felt the burning sensation as they injected me with something. Every molecule came alive and I sat up in bed, rigid and blinded by a burst of white light, with an accompanying pain shooting through my head. There we are. I told you she was ready. So you did. As my vision cleared, the stabbing pain in my temples receded. Two attendants in matching sea-green scrubs stood on either side of the bed. They wore large dark goggles and yellow masks over their mouths. Their heads were shaved close, one brown, one blonde. It's impossible to tell anything else about them. Even their genders are a mystery. Calm down, Jane. Focus on the light. The blonde one shines a light into my eyes and the pain redoubles. I fall back onto my pillow with a cry and grab my temples. The dark-haired one nods and makes a note on the tablet. The blonde one clicks off the light. Okay, Jane. No more lights for now. The brunette clicks off the light and the room is doused in soothing shadows. They each take an arm and pull me to my feet. My head is swimming and the room swoops from side to side when I try to walk. They position themselves under my arms and steer me out the door. I glance back briefly as we enter the hallway. The young man is peering out at me from under the bed. His expression is worrying. The walk down the hall seems to take forever. The room shrinks and expands, and I am wobbly on my legs. The attendants, if that's what these goggled creatures are getting annoyed with me. They drag me along and sigh when I stumble. Finally, we reach a dead end. There is no more hallway. I lean against the wall as the room swirls and eddies around us. The masked attendants say something, but I can't understand them. A high-pitched buzzing has been steadily growing inside my head, and it is drowning out everything else. They move in closer, gesturing wildly, but I'm trapped. I can't get away. The light is growing painfully bright. The whine is louder and more intense. A deafening chime sounds somewhere above me, and the wall falls away behind me. I land hard on the floor of the elevator. The sterile white lights bring me back to my surroundings. Whatever they gave me has worn off, but they don't know it yet. The dark-haired one is watching me. Even with the expression obscuring goggles, I can feel their eyes on me. You can stop pretending, Jane. The blonde one nodded vigorously. Yeah, we know it's worn off. That's part of the fun, the brunette laughed. The elevator gave a final stomach-dropping lurch and the doors opened. Darkness waited beyond. I pressed my back against the wall. No. I want to scream, but it comes out as a whisper. One of the goggled attendants pushes me out of the elevator. They each take an arm and drag me into the darkness. We turn an unseen corner, and the meager light from the elevator is gone. The attendants move confidently. They seem to be able to see in the dark. Sounds swirl around the darkness, groans and unearthly wails, voices. The words come to me in bits and pieces. Each one is filled with anguish. They sink into me, sharing their pain, and it makes me heavy. My already hesitant steps take more effort. My feet are like stone. The attendants are practically carrying me now. Their breathing is just a little more labored under my weight. They stop suddenly. The sounds stop as well. The silence is heavy, and I feel it slowly crushing me. My legs are turning to jelly under the weight. Despite the darkness, I sense there is a wall in front of me. The attendant on my right rattles some keys. There is a metallic scraping sound as the key is inserted in an unseen door. A wave of blinding golden light washes over me and obscures everything else. The attendants push me hard and I stagger into the room. A loud bang follows as they slam the door behind me. I drop to my knees and am surprised to find the floor is soft. A thick, luxurious carpet covers the usual hard tiles. I slide my hands forward through the unbelievable softness and end up splayed out on my belly. I've never felt anything like it. Even as a child, my parents lived in the standard apartments. They were mid-level sellers, but nothing fancy like cars or jet skis. They sold practical things, pots and pans, juicers, mostly kitchen items. Their apartment was the same as all the others on our block. Hard, tiled floors and stiff, unforgiving furniture. A place to sleep between shifts. They worked a lot. I used to draw to fill the time when I was alone. In secret, of course. Even as a child, I understood that drawing was not something I was supposed to do. It started innocently enough. I was very young. Dad was home with a cold and trying to work from the apartment. The power was going off and on as it did from time to time. Dad was cursing and scratching away at a piece of paper with a strange stick. The next power outage made him curse loudly and toss the stick hard against the wall. It bounced off and rattled under the stained wooden table. He stormed into the bathroom and locked the door. As soon as the lock clicked, I crawled under the table and retrieved the strange stick. I hurried to my room and slipped it under my pillow. I was back in the main room just as Dad unlocked the bathroom door. He watched me stack blocks for a moment, then cleared his throat. Time for me to go. Room time, he rumbled. His thick finger pointed to my door. I scurried into the room and waited. Dad didn't move for a long moment. What was he doing? I broke into a sweat and felt my little heart race with fear. The power came back on and the sudden light was blinding. Dad cursed and stumbled. I heard him bump the edge of the table on his way back to the desk in the corner. I heard the bright sound of his tablet coming to life, and allowed myself to relax. The strange stick was still under my pillow. Somehow I expected it to not be there, to have vanished in that brief moment. When my fingers touched the smooth wood, a shock went through me. I wrapped my hand around the stick and pulled it from its hiding spot. It was yellow and pointed on one end. A soft pink stump, worn away in places, covered the other end. I took a book from my shelf. A happy tale about small furry animals that I'd never seen in real life. Around the black and white words were white spaces. Tentatively, I rubbed the pink end across the space. I stared in horror as it began to disintegrate, leaving bits of pink in its wake. I quickly brushed them away and tried the other end. Success. A thin, wobbly gray line emerged from the point. What happened next was completely foreign to me. I lost time. It would happen again and again throughout my life, but that first time terrified me. When I came to, every blank space in the book was filled with pictures. Mom and Dad, my friends at the group school, the food rations we got every week. There were other things, too. Strange things. The pictures were not unpleasant. They made me feel funny, like I wanted to cry, but not from sadness. The pictures made me happy. That's what it was. The thing in all my books. The thing that Mom and Dad took their pills to find. The thing everyone was searching for. I'd found it by myself. And that was a dangerous find. And that is the end of chapter 4 of Feelers, Book Lovers. I hope you are enjoying the story. And I will talk to you next week. And until then, keep reading.